Top officials from the U.S. and China have a frank conversation about economics and trade. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen sat down in the early hours of this morning for a video call with China's Vice Premier Liu He. The U.S. said Dr. Yellen frankly raised issues of concern, while Mr. Liu laid bare its worries about U.S. tariffs and treatment of Chinese companies. The BBC's Nick Marsh has more on that story.
It's the third time this month that the two sides have held talks on trade and the economy, and it definitely seems like there's this increased willingness on the whole to engage a little bit. Most of the information that we have comes from the Chinese Commerce Ministry. They said that the increased talks have been, quote, substantive and groundbreaking. And they haven't explicitly said this, but it seems like they're hopeful that some tariffs may be lifted on certain goods in the near future, but we don't know exact details of that. On the US Treasury side, Janet Yellen, quote, frankly raised issues of concern. She did look forward to future discussions with Vice Premier Liu.
Does this signal a continued thaw in these frosty relations between the US and China?
We haven't seen any concrete concessions on either side, but it's the second time that Yellen and Liu have spoken since Joe Biden took office. And since then, there does seem to have been a very slight improvement in the way Beijing and Washington engage with each other. There was this phone call, Victoria, back in September between President Xi and President Biden. And the idea was that, you know, it was in both sides' interests to communicate a bit more. And those talks were described as candid and pragmatic as well, the same language which has been used today. So there's a bit of a consistent theme developing here. And there's also these small interesting details. The Chinese Commerce Ministry noted things like the fact that the US initiated the talks, that they were held after US working hours, which they seem to appreciate. On both sides, they recognize that they're the two biggest economies. Whatever they decide would have big implications for the world economy. And considering where the two countries were at, especially during the Trump administration, it's probably as much progress as either side can hope for right now.
The BBC's Nick Marsh for us in Singapore. Thanks for digging into this for us.
Thank you.
A quick check of the numbers now. Global stocks are largely higher today, thanks in part to upbeat earnings. European benchmarks are up in the 0.5% to 0.9% range. The Shanghai Composite and Hang Seng closed down 0.3%, while the Nikkei ended up 1.7%. Well, today, Australia pledged to reach net zero carbon emissions by 2050. It's one of the world's biggest exporters, though, of fossil fuels. The announcement comes as the UN's climate summit, COP26, kicks off this weekend in Glasgow. The BBC's Shama Khalil has more on that story from Sydney.
The government needed the support of its junior coalition partner, the National Party, which represents electorates in rural and regional areas where most carbon-intensive industries such as mining are based. The Prime Minister said the target will be achieved through technology, not taxes.
It's not a plan at any cost. There's no blank checks here. It will not shut down our coal or gas production or exports. It will not impact households, businesses or the broader economy with new costs or taxes. It will not cost jobs, not in farming, mining or gas, because what we're doing in this plan is positive things.
Details in the plan include building on Australia's success in solar energy and hydrogen projects. There will also be a $14 billion investment in low-emission technologies. Many critics have said that Australia, the world's second biggest coal exporter, has been too slow on climate action, despite seeing firsthand the impacts of a warming planet through bushfires, floods, and years of drought.
That's the BBC's Shama Khalil reporting from Sydney there. To Afghanistan now, where, as we heard yesterday, the UN's World Food Program has appealed for urgent aid to prevent millions of people there from starving. A flow of international funds have been cut off since the Taliban took over in August. That has pushed the fragile economy into collapse, and it's threatening the lives of millions. The BBC's Yogita Lamai reports from a feeding center being run by Doctors Without Borders in Herat, the country's third largest city. Some listeners may find this report distressing.
In one corner of the intensive care unit is six-month-old Usman. His arms and legs are stick-like, a feeding tube inserted into his nose. He's less than half the weight he should be. His mother told us his twin is in the room next door. The pain that he's suffering, I also feel it. Two of my children are facing death because we don't have any money. I want the world to help Afghan people. Afghanistan has been battered by decades of violence, but also by a very severe drought over the past year. To see the impact that's having on people, we've driven out of the city of Herat. People in the rural settlement told us they had barely any work, very little food. Most meals comprise pieces of dry bread, and there are days when people go without eating. And now, there are some who've been forced to do the unthinkable, sell their children. In one mud and brick home, we met a family who told us they'd sold their daughter. The six-month-old baby girl was asleep in a cradle, her mother by her side.
My other children were dying of hunger. That's why we sold this child. How can I not feel sad? She is my child. I wish I didn't have to sell my daughter.
Once the baby's able to walk, she'll be taken away by the man who bought her. He's paid more than half of the $500 she's been sold for. That will get the family through a few months. They've been told the girl will be married to his child, but no one can be sure. The desperation and the urgency of the situation here is hard to put in words. It's quite clear that there is no more time left to reach the people of Afghanistan. It cannot wait while the world debates whether or not to recognize a Taliban government. Giving the Taliban money without guarantees on human rights and how the funds will be used is dangerous. But Afghanistan is sinking fast. The World Food Programme's Mary Ellen McGroarty told us.
I've never seen a crisis accelerate and magnify at the pace that I'm witnessing in Afghanistan. We must find solutions, innovative solutions, to get the economy restarted.
By November, more than 60% of Afghanistan's people won't have enough to eat. Without intervention, millions here will not survive the winter.
That's the BBC's Yogita Lamai reporting from the western part of Afghanistan there. Her story offers a very brief snapshot of the many challenges facing people there. You can follow her reporting and all of our ongoing coverage of the situation in Afghanistan. Head to bbcnews.com. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.